Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here. Randy is, I don't know. If you're listening, Randy, send help. Call like smoke signals or like put a message in a bottle or something like that. Full disclosure, he's in my basement. We murdered him. He may be back next week.
Yeah. Survivors inside.
Yeah, but that's okay. Justin's here and Will's back. So
I'm back.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. How you doing, Will?
Doing fantastic. Thanks.
How are you doing, Justin?
Fabulous. Thank you.
All right. Now, we've been doing a lot of Game of Thrones, and don't worry, it was the finale, so of course we'll be talking more Game of Thrones today as well. But we thought we'd switch them up, you know, instead of doing, like, 45 minutes of Game of Thrones and, like, quickly going, like, oh, yeah, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened in the world of geek. We thought maybe we'd do the geek stories that we normally do, and then we'll get to Game of Thrones, and we'll do our normal lengthy discussion, but we won't have to rush at the end.
And then that way you can just turn it off if you don't watch the show.
Yeah, and if you came here just for our amazing insights in Game of Thrones, because we are pretty good. We are the three heads of the dragon. You in the show notes, you know, we'll put the timestamp of when we start talking about Game of Thrones if you want to skip talk about stupid things like dumb jokers. But yeah, so it's been a kind of a weird week. We got a unfortunately, to start off with some sad news, Tobe Hooper, who directed, you know, such horror classics as Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Poltergeist, he did the TV adaptation of Stephen King's Salem Lot, as well as Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, unfortunately passed away this weekend. I know Justin loves horror movies, and he loves people who put leather masks on their face, so what, did we lose a big one here, Justin?
I think so. Will's actually no stranger to horror either. He's a pretty big fan. But Poltergeist was pretty scary. I was a little boy when I saw that, and so I was terrified. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I remember my dad rented that when my mom was out of town and sort of being like the bad dad, and he's like, here, check out this movie. It's awesome. And I was like 8 years old, and it scarred me. I'm terrified of just hillbillies in general, like because of that whole scene at the dinner table when the poor girl is like being is tied to the chair and she has to sit there and watch these horrible people eat in front of her. That was awful. And
well, the old man's trying to hit someone over there with a hammer, but he's too feeble to do any damage. I'm like, oh man.
Yeah. So we have Mr. Hooper to thank for that, and it's really sad, and definitely gonna he will be missed. Say the least.
Yeah, so you're a horror guy, Will. So what did you think? I mean, those are two pretty iconic pieces of horror filmography there.
They certainly are. Yeah, I was definitely fortunate enough, I guess, or maybe unfortunate enough to have the older siblings that submitted me to so many horror movies when I was really young. Many of Hooper's films came out just a little bit before my time, I suppose, but set the stage, I think, for a lot of subsequent filmmakers.
Yeah, Poltergeist, it's like your house starts talking to you or the walls start bleeding or things start happening. You just leave. Just leave. Get a new house.
You spent all your money on this one, Dave. You can't just sell it.
You find some sucker that'll buy it. Have them come during the daytime before the creepy shit happens. Yeah, I remember my dad's from a small town in Texas, and most of his side of the family still lives there. So as a kid, I was always kind of interested in anything that like said Texas in it. This was long before I actually went to Texas and realized that I never want to go back to Texas. No offense to Texas people.
That checks out.
And so I remember watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre at a relatively young age and being like, I shouldn't be watching this, but, you know, we had cable my whole life and I didn't sleep so well. And so I remember watching it late at night one day by myself and learning that maybe that's why I don't watch horror movies anymore. It scarred me. And I remember Poltergeist I liked because it had Coach.
Craig T. Nelson.
Craig T. Nelson, yep.
Yeah, well, he's not a bad guy. He's a bad guy in a lot of movies.
Yeah, like Devil's Advocate.
Or just kind of a dick, yeah. It's all about Troop Beverly Hills. He's a good guy in that one.
He comes around. He starts off kind of not the good guy.
But the end, he's got the gumption, and he's excited, and he's like, yeah, let's do this.
It's the perfect movie. It's about female empowerment through the power of men.
Yes.
All this beautiful stuff you accomplished couldn't happen if Craig T. Nelson didn't get the one lady's guy a job and the other guy an acting gig and, if he didn't pay the bills. Beverly Hills, what a thrill.
Beverly Hills, what a thrill. So
Tobe Hooper, he definitely left his mark on the horror franchise. There was definitely a period where, like Justin said, hillbilly films were a thing. Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And those, that's kind of the Mount Rushmore of hillbillies that someone like Rob Zombie's been trying to build on ever since. And that's the kind of horror that really creeps me out because that shit probably happens.
I know. It's so bad. Like, anytime there's, like, sort of some backwood sort of movie, whether it be, like, Deliverance or Wrong Turn, Hills Have Eyes, I feel like it could happen to anybody. It's not some supernatural force. It's just horrible people out in the wilderness. and it's awful. I am much more likely to be afraid of some scary person that has no qualms about killing you, chopping you up, and eating you versus my house where the walls bleed or something like that.
Yeah. It's kind of a roadmap to where if you're going to go in the middle of nowhere, make sure your car's well-maintained.
Yeah, and your cell phone's charged.
You got gas.
Got the gas.
Extra tires.
Yeah.
just fly. Just fly.
Yeah.
Never heard anybody get killed by hillbillies in the sky.
Well, maybe there'll be a movie on...
That's the next one.
On sci-fi. Hillbillies on a plane.
They got the little jugs and stuff like that.
Moonshine.
Got the still. Yikes. That's terrible. It's terrible.
It is. Not as terrible as
some of the James Cameron. We love him. It's well known that he's, kind of an asshole. If you make the two highest grossing films of all time and, just a litany of amazing action films, I guess you can be a dick, do whatever you want. But he kind of put his foot in his mouth talking about he was out promoting the 3D release of T2 Judgment Day in theaters. For some reason, it was released on theaters, and they were talking to him. And he created Sarah. He was integral in the creation of Sarah Connor. A real strong one of the first real strong female leads, and he went out of his way to trash Wonder Woman. Basically saying all of the self-congratulatory back-patting Hollywood's been doing over Wonder Woman has been so misguided. She's an objectified icon, and it's just male Hollywood doing the same old thing. I'm not saying I don't like the movie, but to me it's a step backwards. Sarah Connor was not a beauty icon. She was strong, she was troubled, she was a terrible mother, and she earned the respect of the audience through pure grit. And to me, the benefit of the character like Sarah is so obvious. I mean, half the audience is female. Justin, what the fuck is he saying?
I don't know, dude.
Because Gal Gadot's attractive, she can't be a strong person?
I think that's what it... If we were to simplify it down, then yes. At first I took it as, oh, Linda Hamilton's ugly? That's the first thing I... I'm like, wow, okay, that's nice.
That's fired.
She was this pretty little waitress in the first movie, and then she's a super mega, like, scary lady. Like, when she's doing those push-ups with her bed, or not push-ups, pull-ups in T2, yeah, and then she turns around and has this really gross look on her face, and she's all sweaty and strong and masculine. I was terrified. I was like, oh, shit. She's had better days.
Got some city miles on her.
I was like 12, but I remember being like, whoa, she's changed. I don't know. It's one of those ones where he probably had a relatively, in his mind, a good point, and then he just kind of went off the rails. He just kept talking. And it's one of those things where the person behind him is just sort of digging a grave behind him, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm picturing happening right now, is they're just like, oh man, turn off his microphone, just stop it.
But... Right, we've been in those kind of rooms, we know how it works. You know there's some PR lady, like his PR lady behind him, like, shut up! Just, like, motion, like, stop, yeah. Stop.
I think in his mind, he was making a good point, and whatever he was trying to come across, or get across, was not received well.
Yeah. And so, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm done. It's just, it's unfortunate that in his mind he thought he was saying something relatively clever, and all he did was just dig a hole for himself.
Right, so I'll throw it to you, Will, that Patty Jenkins made a point to be as un-Zack Snyder-y as possible when portraying the Wonder Woman. There was never, you know, an upskirt type shot of her butt. They never overemphasized her chest and stuff like that. She really wanted to portray a strong female warrior, but she's also beautiful because she is an Amazonian. Do you think that she should be in any way diminished just because she is a kick-ass character? She made an awesome movie, aside from maybe some things in the third act. But because she's beautiful, should that detract in any shape, way, or form? Or is that just like the ultimate double standard?
I don't think so. I mean, I think just the standard we put for all of our superheroes are going to be, there's going to be some sex appeal to them, regardless of their gender, because they're supposed to just be this ideal of what, you know, maybe a normal human, or in this case of Wonder Woman, you know, well overpowered, you know, superpowered human could do. And so I think that it doesn't take away from the idea of the image of Wonder Woman at all. It's supposed to be what, I mean, she was created as a sex appeal icon, you know, addition to all of the empowerment that she's supposed to embody with being such a strong woman. So I think Patty was definitely in her rights to defend exactly the way she portrayed Wonder Woman. I think it was a good movie from that perspective of an icon for women.
That's a good point. Can I read her response to James Cameron?
Oh, okay. You have it up? Yeah. Go for it.
Okay. So Patty Jenkins responded on Twitter saying, James Cameron's inability to understand what Wonder Woman is or stands for to women all over the world is unsurprising, as though he is a great filmmaker, he is not a woman. Strong women are great. His praise for my film Monster and our portrayal of a strong yet damaged woman was so appreciated. But if women have to always be hard, tough, and troubled to be strong, and we aren't free to be multidimensional or celebrate an icon of women everywhere because she is attractive and loving, then we haven't come very far, have we? I believe women can and should be everything, just like male lead characters should be. There is no right and wrong kind of powerful woman, and the massive female audience who made the film a hit is and can surely choose and judge for their own icons of progress.
You know what the problem with that statement is? She took to Twitter and she did one of the most irritating things ever, where she types out something, screenshots it, posts it on Twitter. You got 140 characters, Patty. If you want to use more, you go to Facebook.
You gotta summarize a little better.
Yeah. I mean, she always hits the points, you know. It's just silly that I don't even know words. Like this isn't James Cameron's first rodeo. You know, he's been around the block. You know, he's gotten shit for almost every movie he's ever made, you know, by making stupid comments. And it just seems like a silly, silly place to stand on. And I agree with you, Justin. I'm sure that at some point he had a cogent thought that made sense, that like actually had a point. And then over the months that he's been waiting for anyone to ask him a question that he could like, you know, sometimes you have something you want to say, but it's not something you can just blurt out. Someone's got to like trigger it on you or like set you up. Mm-hmm. And they served him the pitch, and he's like, this is my time.
Yep.
And big mistake.
Yeah. She makes some very, very good points.
He is.
that's fact.
Fact. James Cameron has penis.
Right. But the part where she says, but if women have to always be hard, tough, and troubled to be strong, and we aren't free to be multidimensional or celebrate an icon of women everywhere because she is attractive and loving, then we haven't come very far. And that is very true.
I mean, I guess the goal would be we're always just evaluating people on their deeds and how they act rather than what they look like or where they come from. I mean, that's the ideal, regardless of the superhero gender, I would think.
Mm-hmm. If I'm reading between the lines, it just says, James, stop being such a cock.
Yeah. Fist yourself.
That fits on Twitter.
Yeah.
That would have fit on Twitter.
You have characters to spare. She could have done hashtags.
Yeah. James Cameron dick.
David, I think you said it right earlier, too, when we were talking before recording, how, you know, nobody asked you, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like, what are your views on, like, feminism in film?
Well, here's the thing, too, is that Cameron is no stranger to strong women in his movies. Ellen Ripley for Alien, which is Sigourney Weaver. Linda Hamilton, obviously, for Terminator. Even Zoe Saldana's character in Avatar. And Michelle Rodriguez is the helicopter pilot. Well, not helicopter. The not helicopter. I don't know what to call it. All very strong women in his movies. Even in Titanic, for crying out loud.
Rose?
Yeah, she survives, and then she goes on to have this incredible life, right? She gets her pilot license. She gets a driver's license. She gets a notary public license. She's a go-getter. Yeah. She's got a mobile service. I don't know. She does a lot in her time. And that's just sort of his jam. He likes strong women. But that's probably why they pitched the question to him to begin with.
And it's kind of funny, too, because it was from a piece for The Guardian. And you would think that something like this would be like top of the story. It's like 4/5 of the way down the article. Like they couldn't have buried it more if they wanted to. And it's just funny that like it looks like they'd had a long conversation. This was like them wrapping up. And yeah, wow.
I think that's one of the real powers of social media, is that if this was just in a magazine, nobody would have read it. But because people are able to spread the word like wildfire, the whole internet exploded over the course of hours. It's crazy how that works.
Yeah.
Don't talk about the internet.
Yeah, don't talk ever. Dude. Yeah, Cameron does have a daughter with Linda Hamilton.
You know what's funny is you really got to be careful what you say. I was so close to I actually started a tweet, and then I deleted it because I didn't want to be an asshole. I'm finally getting around to binging the new season of Orange is the New Black. It came out in June. Season 5 came out in June. And I watched the first episode, and I hated where it was going, so I put it off. And then all this weekend, I binged it, and I have one episode left. I'm flying through it. But for whatever reason, when you binge watch a show, normally Netflix knows that you're binging, so it skips the intro and just goes straight into the next episode. But with Orange is the New Black, it's not. And that show has the grossest intro ever. With the close-ups of the mouths and the faces and the eyes. It's like a live-action version of Ren and Stimpy, and I can't stand it. And I feel like Netflix is punishing me. And I almost tweeted about the intro, but I didn't want to be just destroyed for not liking an intro video that showcases women and women's bodies. Yeah, I was like, I don't want to be shamed because I don't like close-ups of eyes and mouths and teeth with platinum and shit in the mouths and the grills and tattoos on lips and things. I don't know. I don't find it flattering at all. Yeah, and I didn't want to be that asshole, so I was like, fuck it, it's not worth it. And I just backed it up, and I didn't
back it up.
Isn't that sad that I was too scared to tweet about that? I was like, fuck it, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Luckily, I think for something like that, I think they're trying to be gross, so I think you'd be okay.
Maybe.
But yeah, there's always one person out there like, oh, would you be fine with men's close-up mouths?
No, I wouldn't. Not any mouth. And
in which case, you just reply with your up-close mouth.
Yeah. Do you want to look like at this for 2 minutes? Yeah, it's awful. There's nothing flattering about it. And it's not supposed to be. It's humanizing these prisoners. And, you know, they're very vulnerable women. And it could be anybody. It could be a dog's mouth. It could be, like you said, a man's mouth or their eyes. It's just, it's gross. I don't want to look at it. I want to fast. I want Netflix to skip it. That's all I want.
Just say it's not because they're women. It's because they're criminals. You just take criminals. Don't talk to me, criminal. I hate that shit when you can't skip the intro. House of Cards is like that, too. You couldn't skip that intro, and the intro is like 6.5 minutes long.
Oh, I know. It's really long. Wow. Now it does it. It didn't use
Oh, really?
It. Yeah.
It didn't do it for me. I was all pissed. Every time, and it's not something that always started at the beginning of the episode. Sometimes you got to watch a couple minutes, and then you got a soft opening. And
yeah, I always hated that when there was a soft opening.
Anyways, did we hammer it all, Will? Did we work it out that Patty Jenkins was right, James Cameron is being a dick?
Well, there was no doubt about that on this case, but yeah, I think we did.
Look, James, we'll go. If we need technical advice on how to make a technical film, we'll go to you. If we want to talk about women, we'll go to anyone but you.
Yeah, we'll go to a woman. Someone that knows a thing or two.
Someone with different parts than you have.
Yeah.
You know, down there. Speaking of down there, what the hell is going on with DC and Warner Brothers? So we've had all of this nonsense. I mean, we're actually in, like, a sweet spot for Warner Brothers. They actually made a film that everyone, minus James Cameron, loved and adored and is saying great things about. Then they hit us with all this shit about the Justice League and these reshoots and how it's going to cost $1 trillion and they're changing the whole movie around. And then Ben Affleck's not directing the Batman. Now he might not star in the Batman. And then Matt Reeves is going to direct it. And then he's not going to direct it. Now he's going to direct it. Then they throw out Ben Affleck and Geoff Johns' script. And then Casey Affleck says Ben Affleck's not going to be in the movie. And then Matt Reeves says movie's not part of the DCEU. And then he says, no, I just mean that other characters from DC aren't going to be in this movie. Will, is it like panic time for DCEU, or is it like, should, do we all just need to like turn off all alerts for DC and Warner Brothers and just watch the films when they come out? Because I'm tired of hearing about Batman, and this movie is like a year and a half away.
Yeah, if they would have any hope for their films to have any success at all, they've got to stop this negative, the no all press is good press idea, I suppose. Because it's definitely turning off viewers like yourself, myself, I don't know how many people I've talked to about just the conflicts going on with the DCU universe. Like, I don't want to really watch the movies anymore at this point.
Right, because
there's,
I mean,
a chance for that.
Yeah, all films hit like a fatigue level. Like, usually Disney's the king of it. You know, they advertise the shit out of the movie. And so by the time it finally comes out, you're like, this movie isn't out yet?
To like not I've even get most of the advertisement, but to already be tired.
Yeah, you got all these trailers and stuff. With the Batman, we haven't even seen, they haven't even filmed anything, and I think people are already sick of this
it's
shit.
It's not even written. They tried writing it, and they said, fuck it, we're going to start over.
And do it again. Do it again.
I mean, I think the terrible example of this, or maybe the best example, is the Ghostbusters reboot. Which, as much as I enjoyed it, because my brother actually had a small role, you know, plugging him in that movie, I don't know. It was hard to even want to pay for the ticket because of how much negative press it got. And, yeah, before he could have a chance to get off the floor.
Which is a shame, because it's two-thirds of a really good movie.
That ending's awful.
Yeah, it falls apart at the end, but...
Definitely.
It's pretty... There's some real funny parts. Kate McKinnon's great. Like, when they get her to, like, listen to the recording, and it's a fart, and then she's like, oh my god, I can't believe you, no one's ever listened to it, and you actually leaned in. It's like, that's gross. Is it more gross if I tell you it came out the front? I love.
That's edgy.
So funny.
It definitely is. But Justin, can the DCEU just go away for a little bit? Just go make movies. You know, we didn't hear shit about Wonder Woman, and look how good it was. We heard a ton from Suicide Squad, and it was terrible. We heard a ton from Batman v Superman. It was terrible. Now we're hearing a ton from the Batman. Is it going to be terrible?
I hope not, dude. I really hope not. I'm scared. We talked about this the other day about it just being always in the news every week, and I never really gave much thought of it until you pointed it out. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Now my brain is wired differently, and I feel like I'm supposed to hate it before it even comes out. And that makes me sad, because I was always excited about Affleck being Batman, and I like the idea of more Batman, and now I feel like it's in not very, uncapable hands. The suits at Warner Brothers are nutso. I dare say Crazy Town Banana Pants.
You got a great actor playing the lead. You got a great director directing the film. Just shut up, Warner Brothers, and let them make a movie.
Yeah.
I bet if there were no suits involved, if they just gave Matt Reeves $150 million or whatever the budget's going to be and says, hey, why don't you and Ben go make this movie? I bet they would come back with like the most amazing movie ever. Like, we'd be like, Christopher Nolan, who? But I mean, Will, are the suits going to ruin this one like they did Suicide Squad?
And Batman and Robin.
I don't think that was the suits' fault. That was really Schumacher's fault.
Yeah, I think they're just setting up the movie and any potential it has up for failure at this point, to follow the theme of previous movies like you listed at Suicide Squad.
But, I mean, it appears they didn't intervene much, if at all. The only time we ever heard any kind of intervention from Warner Brothers on Wonder Woman was when Michelle McLaren left as director and they hired Patty Jenkins. From that point on, it was like, are they still making a Wonder Woman movie? Like, it almost got to the point to where you're, like, worried. Like, at some point, like, if your baby doesn't cry for a certain amount of time, you're like, oh, shit, is my baby still alive?
Yeah, hold the mirror like, up.
Like, exactly. It almost felt like that. Like, oh, shit, maybe they're not making a Wonder Woman movie. I haven't heard all this and that. And I'm just really afraid that it's going to get mucked up.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you there. And I'm hoping that we at least get some more details about what's going to come together for the film just before we, you know, or many of the films before they all get this bad reputation before they get a chance.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't worry. Warner Brothers is doubling down. They want to make you feel at ease. They're letting us know that they're working on both a Joker origin film that doesn't star Jared Leto, that does not take place in the DCEU. But just to confuse us more, they're also toying with the idea of a Jared Leto, Margot Robbie, Harley Quinn Joker movie that would take place in the DCEU. Justin, how fucking confusing is that going to be?
Yeah, it's a bad idea, man. I do not understand what's happening at all. And on top of that, the people that are behind this Joker origin movie, Todd Phillips to direct, so Hangover,
yes.
Fucking Road Trip. The guy knows how to make great movies and everything. But I don't know if it's necessarily right for this particular mold, because you also get Scott Silver. He's like the guy behind 8 Mile and The Fighter. So he knows how to write. But then you have Martin Scorsese to produce the movie. I don't know. It seems like it's all over the place. I feel like these are three very different personalities coming together. And that might be one of those... too many cooks in the kitchen scenarios. In addition to the Warner Brothers suits that you have that seem to fuck up everything.
When I got the press release, I no joke spent like 10 minutes Googling if there was a different Martin Scorsese. There's no way that Goodfellas Martin Scorsese's going to produce a Todd Phillips directed Joker movie. I mean,
yeah, maybe the eclectic collaboration here is going to be what the recipe needed to create a chaotic Joker idea.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot. Did you see War Dogs, Justin? Or Will, either one? The Todd Phillips movie with Jonah Hill and Miles Teller?
Yes.
Not yet.
I hated that movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a mess of a film at a lot of points, to where I was thinking, this reminded me a lot of that. My only like silver lining was thinking that, you know, like Scorsese, he's got a lot of clout, like maybe he can push off the suits. Like maybe Phillips came to him, or maybe they were doing something or met at a party, and he pitched Scorsese on this like killer idea for like a Joker movie. And Scorsese went to the suits and says, hey, dude, this guy has a fucking great idea. And they're like, oh, we'll let him make it if you are the producer or something like that. I'd love to think this is one of those like great Hollywood stories where like two great filmmakers came together and out came this great product. But I mean, am I just crazy?
So the thing is, though, I don't feel like this movie needs to be made. I don't necessarily want a Joker origin story. I like the idea of in The Killing Joke, how he just had a bad day and just sort of snapped. And I think it's a story that can be told in a few minutes. I don't think it's an hour and a half or a 2-hour movie. I think it is a 10-minute story.
Yeah, what would be the goal of fleshing out his backstory that much more? Because would it humanize him more? Which, do we really want that, maybe?
No,
or
not at all.
Would it just
ruin
the kind of mystery behind him that I'm sure most people who aren't as into comics and film as we are would just have a more mysterious idea of the Joker's background?
Right, I mean, you kind of hit it right there, Will. Like, who's this movie for? I mean, comic book fans, they don't want to know anything about the Joker. I mean, it's like Boba Fett. You know shit about Boba Fett. You know, that's 90% of the reason why he's cool. How'd he get that cool armor? What's that den from? What's this from? Is he dead in the Sarlacc? Who knows? That's why he's cool. Once you started going to episode 2 and you're like, oh, he's a clone and this and that, it kind of pussied him a little bit. But you know, they didn't go too far. That's why I'm kind of against the Boba Fett standalone movie, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, really, Will, who's this for? I mean, my wife could give two shits. I mean, the everyday average movie girl, she could care less, you know. Right. I'm a huge Batman fan. I could care less. I like the Joker's amp. Like, that's what I loved about The Dark Knight, is the Joker gave, like, four stories about how he got these scars. Joker's a crazy motherfucker.
Yeah, I can't think of a single friend of mine that I know this movie would be suited well for, that they're definitely paying money to know what's going on before the Joker meets the Batman and the Dark Knight series, or whatever the example you want to pull up. I don't know why. Why make this movie?
Right.
Especially if you're not going to use Jared Leto, if you're not going to ride off of the Suicide Squad, you know, interest in Jared Leto, I really don't know why.
Right, so... Gosh, I feel like I just wanted to shout out like 100 different things while you guys were talking.
Sorry.
No, fine.
Please.
It's fine. Totally cool. But I do like the mystery of the Joker and not necessarily knowing where he came from. And if he does tell you, should you even believe him? Like in the case of Ledger's Joker. But at the same time, I've always come to accept the fact of Tim Burton's Joker, where he just fucking fell into a vat and he went crazy. I'm okay with that. I didn't really care for the idea that he sort of turned him into that Joe Chill character and also killed Bruce Wayne's parents. I didn't like how they kind of came full circle that way. You know, like you say, you made me. Well, you made me first. I mean, I get it for the sake of the movie, but as an adult, when I rewatched it, I didn't really care for that part of the movie. But then, as far as like different versions of the Joker, you know, in the comic books. Joker always looks a little bit different when there's a new artist that takes him on. And he's looked different a billion times over the course of the last, 80 years of Batman. So I've always been okay with a new sort of look and representation of him. But for the sake of how Marvel has built this amazing MCU where it's all connected, and DC isn't even... trying to do something that obviously works. Marvel has set like a proven track record of keeping it as all one cohesive unit, and DC just seems to zigzag all over the goddamn place in trying to make us understand what they're building. And it would make way more sense if they just kept the same actor for the role.
Right. I mean, they clearly want to build a universe, a cinematic universe, and they should want to because Marvel did a great job at it. But so now we're hearing that the Batman movie will be in the universe, but isn't going to expand the universe by featuring any of the other characters. And the standalone Joker origin story is going to take place out of the continuity. And so it just makes, aside from being incredibly confusing, it doesn't really give them the value they want. If they want Leto to be their Joker, and it sounds like they do because they're talking about having him and Margot Robbie reappear, then they need to let him be the origin Joker. I mean, unless we're going to get Joker at, like, 12, which I would hate.
you better believe they're going to kick that movie off with him as a child.
Like abusing animals or something?
Yeah.
Or no, he'll be the abused kid.
See, and I like the idea of him being normal and then just having a bad day.
Yeah, he's a stand-up comic. That's the only way I can see it work.
Yeah.
The only way I see this being successful with the origin story film is there a way to portray how he becomes the Joker to make it look like any one of us could have that same event happen and in that same way become so unhinged?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great idea. But you know who's not the guy to bring that emotional character-driven piece to cinema? Todd Phillips,
yeah. He's going to be the little skinny guy from fucking Road Trip. that's who's going to be playing Joker.
What is like that? What you just said, Will, is a cool idea, but the talent they've brought on board is not who's going to make them. But you told me like Rian Johnson was brought on board, or you know someone who's like got like an eye for character. Then you told me Catherine Bigelow is doing this. I would be like, you know, this could work. But Todd Phillips will
telling
give us
me there's a chance.
You're telling me there's a chance. Todd Phillips will give us a slick, fun movie, but I think I would rather see an original Todd Phillips film. You know, he's made some really great comedies that I love and adore. And in this era of adaption, you know, everyone says they want X director to make like a Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie. But you have to realize that all directors have a finite number of films for that they can create in their lifetime, be it, you know, they retire or they die. And I would hate for Todd Phillips to waste several years of his life making this probably not great movie when he could be giving us a movie on par with Road Trip, Old School, Hangover, Hangover 3, the best of the trilogy.
Shut it. Shut your mouth.
I almost couldn't even get that out of my mouth. But he's so talented. I mean, even his Starsky and Hutch reboot makes me laugh when I watch it. Do it.
That was funny.
Yeah.
I just want these directors who have the clout to make original films to continue making original films. And the directors, you know, like your Russos or people who need to, like, kind of earn their stripes still, let them direct these Marvel movies, because in the end, you're not really directing the film. The studio, Kevin Feige, stunt coordinators, second-unit directors, they're doing the heavy lifting. You're just basically director on paper. Mm. So I'll get off my soapbox now, sorry.
What if it was an Arkham movie in the vein of Old School?
Oh, I'd be in line right now.
Just all the different criminals in Arkham, and they make like a fraternity.
Yeah, just like
Blue.
Just Freeze. You're my boy, Blue. Oh yeah, I would dig on that. I mean, it sounds more like a Robot Chicken sketch than a 90-minute movie, but
exactly.
You know.
Which I think this origin tale is again a 10-minute story. It doesn't need to be longer than that. It's a campfire story.
Yeah.
An urban legend.
Out and scares you.
Yeah. It's way better to not know about him. He needs that veil, that mystery.
Or maybe they bring back the idea that we were hoping for a Suicide Squad, and the Joker is so crazy and so delusional, he thinks he's the good guy, and Batman's the bad guy, and we get to see, like Batman, like, being the bad guy.
Right, and that's what we wanted in Suicide Squad, was Batman being just this unstoppable force hunting them down as they're trying to pull off this mission. That would have been incredible. We didn't get that.
I don't get it. But anything else on that, Will?
No, but now I wish you would have put ideas of what could have been a much better Suicide Squad in my head.
on the plus side, Killer Croc got BET in itself.
He did get, oh my god. That movie. Don't forget, he got his family. What about you, Justin? Anything else on anything we talked about before we get to the Game of Thrones?
Yes, there's also going to be the Joker and Harley Quinn movie.
Oh, yes, there is.
And that will have Jared Leto and Margot Robbie.
Just to confuse you.
Yes. sort of a Bonnie and Clyde kind of tale, I'm imagining, where they're just going to paint the town red and get away with murder.
Now,
at least
I am
makes a little
happy.
More sense.
Yeah, I'm more than happy for some more Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, but I... Like, take or leave Joker. Mm-hmm. Or Jared Leto's Joker.
Maybe it'll have, a Thelma and Louise sort of ending where they drive off a cliff. Freeze frame. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Margot Robbie was working on a Gotham City Sirens movie that David Ayer was going to direct. That was going to have, you know...
That's still on the table, from what I understand.
It still is, but I have a hard time believing that they're going to have Margot Robbie in this Joker movie, in Suicide Squad 2, and give her a third one. That seems like an awful lot of Harley Quinn.
But they're also able to introduce Poison Ivy and Catwoman into the mix.
Catwoman again?
Yeah. Clean slate!
That is what DC needs. That needs to be Pete Holmes' next Batman thing, as he finds DCU the clean slate. All right. Let's talk about something better. Let's leave the world of DC behind us, and let's go to a magical place, a place of Westeros, a place ruled by the beautiful, the just, the benevolent, and the magnanimous Queen Cersei Lannister. So
she's some of those things.
I thought you were going to say there's no cocks, because that was the theme of the opening of the episode.
Yeah.
Great way to start the episode talking about cocks. Okay, so we got an 82-minute blockbuster finale. I guess real quick, let's just go quick thoughts. Justin, What were your quick thoughts on the episode? Love it, hate it, meh.
I really enjoyed it. My buddy and I, we watched it together, and we were kind of having fun with it. There were a lot of times where jokes could be made based on what you were seeing on screen, and we had a good time. When it was all said and done, I walked away enjoying this season.
Awesome. What about you, Will?
I had so much fun last night watching the finale. I think I just now tweaked my viewing strategy, and I have, I think, 3 beers gets me right about where I should be to overlook anything I should be overlooking, and I can just enjoy everything. I think I was on the edge of my couch probably 81 minutes of the 82 minutes, if that was the length. I enjoyed every single bit of it.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Like I said, my favorite Game of Thrones is when people are just sitting around talking, and we got a lot of that this episode, and I loved it. And so the episode started right off the bat. We're in King's Landing. We got a reunion. We get Bronn and Tyrion having a real reunion. We got Pod and Tyrion having a reunion. You got Hound and Brienne having a reunion. Everyone is just amazing. We get to the Dragon Pit. We have this basically almost every major character in the whole show, like with all within like 15 feet of each other. And like, I remember just watching it like it just felt important because like so many of these characters have never been on screen together. And so many of them have been seasons since they've been on screen together. Will, was there any specific interaction between any of these cast members that really got you juiced?
I think the standouts for me was definitely the Hound. I enjoyed every single one of his scenes that he had with Brienne. You know, thinking about Arya and how much he actually cares about her is really obvious. You know, he's not hiding anymore like he used to be. And then, obviously, going up to his brother and throwing the challenge down, that was, I mean, a great moment to kind of bring their relationship full circle. And then I think the big surprise for me of how much I enjoyed it was the Euron, because he was a wild card for me. We don't have as much background on Euron as we do with the rest of the characters that were all present. So he was the one I didn't know what he's going to do at all. And I think I was thrown for a complete loop on that plot reveal I'm sure we'll get to later. And so that was really fun watching. And as well as seeing Theon and the, you know, first grains of sand towards whether or not he's going to be able to redeem himself against his uncle.
I can't believe he's still on the show, Will. I wrote off Theon Greyjoy as just a nobody in the first 10 minutes of the show back in season 1.
Yeah, and when he's giving Jon a hard time about his direwolves.
Like, I listened to your father, not to bastards or whatever. It's like, dude, eat a dick. And I hated the guy ever since. And I just remember laying in bed reading Dance of Dragons when the reveal is that he's alive. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I haven't dealt with this asshole since book 2, and he's still alive. I cannot believe he is still a thing.
Yeah,
I think somebody said earlier, and I can't remember which season and who said it, it's coming back to me just barely, but somebody was saying how much, I mean, it's probably Varys, actually, talking to Tyrion, and how not having a, you know, appendage between your legs can open you up for so many opportunities or, you know, new potential realms of activity. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's something that helped out Theon. He made it through because he wasn't distracted anymore.
Yeah, I mean, in the first episode, when they come across the direwolves, he's the one that's going to kill him. Like, when Ned's talking about, like, ah, better to kill him now, he, like, busts out his knife in, like, 1 second. So I'm like, oh, what a piece of shit. He's going to kill these pups. But I had wrote Theon off just like you did until he had a scene with Jon in Dragonstone. And when the two of them had their little moment where Jon is basically like, it's like, if you want to do it, just shut up and do it. Mm-hmm. And, like, it almost gave me a glimmer that, like, you know, maybe that would flip something in his head. And, you know, he went out, he kind of fought for Yara, and that they're going to go get him. But, other than that, I would pretty much written off Theon, but I'm anxious to see where his story goes. That, like, he's just like, I've done shitty things. The only thing I can do in life now is to rescue my sister. She's the only one who believed in me. And it's like, I'm going to move hell and high water to save her.
That was actually my favorite scene.
Yeah, it was great. Kicked him in the balls, wasn't there.
Well, not so much the fight. The fight I was almost laughing at, but the Jon and Theon scene in the throne room of Dragonstone, I just found it to be, like, that was the moment that Theon, you know, needed to kind of get in the last push in the right direction, because as Jon pointed out, he was definitely more Ned Stark's son than he was a Greyjoy, And the only people who have really reached out to help him was his sister, who's only going to give him the, you know, Greyjoy methods of parentage, I suppose, or, you know, tough love. And that's not what he needed in that moment, and definitely after everything he's been through. And so I think John's ability to really do what nobody else can do in the show, in that he can forgive him for all the things he's done, because he has so much, John has so much more clarity on the big picture. Mm-hmm. And that that was, I thought that was a really touching moment. It almost got me to, you know, tear up a little bit as I watched a couple times more. That was a great scene.
Yeah, and I love that the Hound brought in the white, like, he wore him like a backpack.
Yeah, that was great.
It's like, he had a horse.
And just to one little part that was sort of my favorite out of the whole episode was when, after they reveal the White Walker, Cersei's like, you can see fear in her face for like one of the first times in a long time. She was terrified of what she saw. But what made it even cooler was what we thought was when Euron's just like, all right, fuck this shit, I'm out. Like, I thought that was such a Greyjoy thing to do. Like, yeah. It just seemed like such a Greyjoy move through and through, to just pack up your shit and go back to the Iron Islands when he found out that they couldn't swim. And
yeah, sold it perfectly.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that is my favorite moment when he just did that. Of course, that all sort of falls apart, but in the moment, I thought that was amazing. It's like, yeah, I like your style.
Yeah, and he goes to like Dan, and he's like, I'm going back to my island. I suggest you do the same.
Yeah.
And when winter's over, we'll come and we'll rule this land together.
Yep.
How about that?
I think that was in the top 4 or 5 moments for me in this episode, where I really was totally sold on what they were selling to me with their body language and stares and the way the conversations were going between different characters. So I'd say that I was totally believing. And then obviously Tyrion's talk shortly after that scene with Cersei alone in the mountain lingering behind. And later, Jaime and Cersei again.
Oh, that was incredible.
So many of those moments I was right on edge. Like, I don't really know, because I feel like we haven't had those terrible deaths that we usually get where somebody we really appreciate goes the wayside. So I was really worried for all these main characters.
Absolutely. Especially since it's the finale. So you were ready to, we were all ready for a death, a meaningful death. And there was a moment when it could have been Tyrion. There was a moment it could have been Jaime. And I was genuinely terrified. I was like, oh my God, is this really how Jaime gets it? And I was so scared. And I loved just how heroic he was. As soon as she said, okay, we're going to march to the north with you, I was like, oh yeah, it's on like Donkey Kong. And Jaime didn't even skip a beat. He was like, we got to go now.
Yeah,
there is no tomorrow. This is happening right now. And I thought that was such, like, he is shown what a real hero he is, and how he puts, you know, the like king and country before anything else kind of thing. Like, that's his attitude. And I loved that. And I loved how it was a fight for survival for the species. And if we're going to have a future, we have to work together. I love how he bought into that. He is not foolish. And
you mean Jaime, the stupidest Lannister?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought clearly country before queen, because he walked out like a boss.
Yeah, he knew what he had to do. And I love that. I think that was fantastic. That was a very powerful moment. He just packs up his shit and says, fuck it, I'm doing this.
Yeah, I think that going back to the Tyrion Cersei scene, I think that may have been my favorite scene of the episode, just because I read it as Cersei played Tyrion. Like,
right.
She let him know she was pregnant in a way to try to, like, maybe gain an advantage in him that clearly had worked, because he, you know, she had to pretend to go back and be persuaded by her brother, and probably sow some distrust in, you know, Daenerys and stuff for Tyrion. Like, oh, what did you promise her to come back and stuff like that? And just the whole point to where she hates Tyrion with every fiber in her body, but Tyrion is still a Lannister, and she could not pull the trigger to kill a Lannister. And I think that it was very powerful when Tyrion started talking about Tommen and Marcella, and how Cersei didn't want to hear it, And then he said, you know, Tyrion was tearing up and saying, you know, I love those children. You knew it. And Cersei couldn't even, with all the venom she normally has, she couldn't even muster like a counter to that. Like she knows that like Tyrion loved her children. And that's like something that they shared in common. And that even though she spent all of these years plotting and hoping for his death, when she had the opportunity, she didn't take it because he was a Lannister, and she still had a use for him. And Tyrion is smart, but Cersei's a little smarter. She is Tywin's daughter. And yeah, when she, same thing when she was talking to Jaime, and when you heard Sir Gregor take his sword out, I'm like, oh no! I'm like, you can't kill Jaime. And I thought that was the end, and then he just like turned around and looked at him, and he's like, peace. He just walked out into the snow.
I'm still holding on to my suspicion that the baby with Cersei and Jaime is not a real thing. And I'm kind of wondering, based, you know, following Tyrion's line of how much he loved the children and that, you know, his nephews and nieces, I wonder if she was playing off his love of those, you know, have this unborn nephew or niece in making him, you're suspecting that he won't make any moves against her that would, you know, put that child at risk because of how much he loved being an uncle, I guess, to the other children.
It's a good point.
Yeah. And where do you guys think Jaime's gone?
I guess Winterfell followed Brienne back.
What do you think the reaction will be if when he arrives at Winterfell? Last time he was there, he pushed Bran out the tower.
He stabbed Ned Stark in the leg that led to his, you know, slow demise, I guess, because he wasn't getting around as quick as he used to be.
He didn't stab him, that one of the other
guys.
That's right. He got mad because he wanted
challenging him.
Yeah, he always wanted to fight him.
John's going to accept him.
Yeah, my hope is that he basically goes back to Winterfell. I mean, he's all alone. Obviously, he has, you know, he's like, I'm here to, if you want to use me, that's great. My hope is that he basically goes to Bran, you know, throws himself at Bran's feet, like, you know, yes, I did this, but I promise you that with, as long as there's breath in my lungs, you know, I will pledge my sword to you, and that he becomes like, almost like Bran's protector. And
Valyrian steel sword, nonetheless.
Yeah. And there's another way, I mean, now all the Valyrian steel that we know of is now going to Winterfell, you know. They made points that Samwell took their Valyrian steel and he's at Winterfell. You know, and now that Jaime is taking this steel there, all of the Valyrian steel that we know of in all of Westeros is headed to Winterfell. So
yeah, I could see Sam giving up his sword to maybe the Hound or somebody more deserving of a blade like that.
Oh yeah, because even the Hound even said, I always wanted Valyrian steel.
See, I was thinking that the White Walkers were going to make it to Winterfell, and Sam would actually defend Gilly and the little kid.
Sam?
Little Sam?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
So I think my biggest prediction, kind of talking about the Hound and Jaime on right here on the tails of that, I think my biggest prediction for those two characters is that with the Hound dropping his challenge to his brother and then Jaime obviously having the final fallout with his sister, I think those two are going to go back somehow to King's Landing, and it's going to be a, you know, Clegane Bowl as the opportunity to get the Mountain away from Cersei, and then Jaime can close in for the final Valonqar kill that we all have kind of been hoping for from the books.
It's a good idea.
But she'll get him too. I think they'll die together.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like he'll stab her from the front. You know, he won't repeat the Aerys thing. And he'll look in her eyes, and he'll give her, like, one last kiss, and she's got a dagger, and she just jams it in, like, the side of his neck or something like that.
Oh, that would suck.
Yeah, I don't see either one of them making it out of this show. I think that Jaime will do what needs to get done, but I think Cersei will get one last...
They came into the world together, and they'll go out together.
Uh-huh. And that makes me really sad to think about, too, because... when I think it was probably book three that I fell in love with Jaime, right? When he's sort of a prisoner, he got his hand chopped off in book three, and you really kind of find out what kind of person he was, and or is for that matter. He really opens up as being this hero to me, and I am going to be really sad if he doesn't make it to the end of the show.
Yeah, there's a real powerful scene in the show that it's definitely worth YouTubing to like watch it again. I watched it recently to where it's Brienne and Jaime in the tub. It's right after Jaime's lost his hand, and he's kind of like loopy because of the pain and the blood loss. And she's like just berating him for being an oath keeper. And then he basically just like throws it back at her. Like, what would you do if your king told you, what would you do if Renly told you to kill your father and to burn everyone alive in the city?
Yeah.
You know, would you be able to be so noble and honest at that? So yes, I did what I did and I saved all these people. And it was probably the scene that turned me on Jaime as well. You know, the whole journey with Brienne where Brienne's in the bear pit and she's obviously going to get killed, but Jaime knows that he has value and they don't want him to die. So he jumps in as well and kind of helps her. And it goes back to what we were talking about a couple weeks ago about how this season has, you know, been in fast forward mode and it's been pretty predictable to where George R. R. Martin was all about, you know, taking fantasy tropes and turning them on their head. When we first meet Jaime Lannister, he is the epitome of a despicable person. You know, he's fucking his sister, who's married to the king. He's throwing kids out of the window. He's betraying everything. He's an oath breaker. And over the course of these seasons, you know, we've peeled back the layers that are Jaime Lannister, and we've realized that there is good in him. Same thing with people like the Hound or Tormund. When we first met Tormund, he was killing people, you know, in like Molestown and stuff, like just without any remorse. Now he's arguably my favorite character in the whole show. And same thing with the Hound. Like the Hound was, he killed the butcher's boy in episode 2 just because he ran and he was a terrible person. But then, you know, in season 2 with the Battle of Blackwater, he protected Sansa, and you know, they had the unkiss for you Sansan shippers out there. I don't see Sansa and Sandor Clegane hooking up, but you know, there are people out there who wish for it. And, yeah, they just all these came together, and that's what kind of made the show special. What about Danny's entrance? Everyone's sitting there waiting. They're like, where's this fucking lady?
I pictured the albatross from, like, The Rescuers Down Under.
Like, oh, yeah, running like, off the runway.
Yeah, just having problems. That's totally what I was thinking the entire time. I was like, oh, my God, this Drogon is a fucking albatross. And it's pretty cool. Great. Showmanship.
Yeah, and Drogon didn't want anything of it. He was fucking roaring. And I like that Cersei saw right through the two dragons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We called that. Like,
yeah.
The other day, like a couple weeks ago, we were like, oh, she's going to be like, oh, I thought she had three. Where's the third? And sure enough, she mentioned it.
Yeah, and Jaime was like, I don't know, maybe it's somewhere else doing this. She's like, she brought like all the Dothraki and all the Unsullied. She's like, she would have brought everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Mm-hmm.
That was an excellent way to start the tone of the meeting, too, where Cersei goes, you know, we've been waiting for quite some time.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Hello.
Already furious.
Yeah. That was great. I dug it. Sort of the dragon pit looking like, you know, the Colosseum. Looked pretty fucking neat. That was cool.
Yeah. It would have been cool to see in its day when it actually had the domed roof. But,
I was thinking, what if one of the spinoff series shows that in its true form? Like it's sort of like a nod, like, hey, you're gonna get this thing in full force when it goes back like 800 years or whatever the fuck, whenever Aegon first comes. 300 years ago? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it'd be great. I would love to see, like, an Aegon Targaryen kind of conquering Westeros.
The only thing is we've already kind of seen that story. We're watching it right now, where a Targaryen comes from.
Named so, Aegon?
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of a rehash.
Yeah, so this Aegon didn't have as much trouble.
Yeah.
This Aegon wasn't afraid to use his dragons.
He has a Battlefield Earth kind of thing, where the fight lasted 7 minutes.
Yeah. It's definitely worth a Wikipedia read for because they compile all like the supplemental material that Martin's written about, you know, Aegon's conquest, and it talks a lot about Harrenhal, about how it was like this unbreachable fortress, and they're like, oh, no one can come. And so then Aegon flew in with just his dragon and just burnt them all to a crisp. And and that's when the Field of Fire version one, where the Lannisters swore fealty to the Targaryens and stuff like that. So
that's what they do.
They find a way. They're like Ian Malcolm. Life finds a way.
So what if the Lannisters bend the knee, as it were, to Daenerys, just to fight for survival, just to live to plot another day? Do you think that is a possibility at all? Or do you think that the Lannisters are going to be wiped from the face of the earth?
I don't see Cersei bending the knee.
Never.
But I definitely could see Jaime, just...
being in a Kingsguard again?
So it didn't work out so good for the last couple. But I just can't imagine Cersei. Can you, Justin?
No. I mean, if the baby is fake...
real?
Then no. But if it's real, then maybe. Only in that she could live to plot another day. But I would really, 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 really hoping... I'm hoping and praying that Jaime just comes out as, like, MVP of this long winter and just annihilates some White Walkers and he gets a place at the table.
The Jaime is the prince that's promised?
Yeah, exactly.
he's the one I prefer, because obviously Jon Snow is the front runner, but I really would love it to be Jaime or even the Hound, which is like another like crazy fan theory that the prince that is promised, or Azor Ahai, is the Hound. And I think that would just be great if it's just this fucking guy who the whole show has been like, I'm not a knight, and like this and that, if he becomes like the savior of Westeros.
Yeah.
Sandor Clegane.
Kissed by fire.
It's gingers I hate. Ah, gingers are beautiful. Kissed by fire. But so are you. Yeah. But yeah, we went to Winterfell.
Yeah.
We got Sansa deciding like what she's gonna do, and just when you think that she's calling Arya to sentence her to death, she pulls a switcheroo and gets fan favorite Lord Baelish on the ground, begging for his life in tears. Justin, as a lifelong Baelish fan, is this how you thought it would end for him? Or did
you want
him to go with more dignity?
I remember we all got to pick sort of like who we thought was going to die, and I picked Arya. I was like, oh yeah, she's going down like a sweet muffin. I thought for sure Baelish was going to teach her a thing or two about being the sneaky silver fox. And when he's playing Sansa, at least in his mind, when he's playing her and playing that game and asking her the questions, I was like, man, this girl just never learns. And the only thing that bothers me about this entire ordeal is that with Arya and Sansa playing Littlefinger, I don't think it's realistic that we were... a fly on the wall during their conversations where they were against each other. I just have to assume that when they were arguing with one another and being weird, it was sort of if these walls could talk kind of a scenario where they didn't know if anybody was listening, so they had to sort of
always
be,
play
their parts.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the only way I could really like accept it. But I was really, 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 really hoping that Littlefinger was going to come out on top on all this. He was my dark horse. As a former used car salesman, I found beauty in what Littlefinger was doing. It was, I'm a sucker for the bad guy. And I was not, my heart was not ready for that sort of betrayal to take place.
Yeah,
I think I'm gonna give him a little credit in that the only way I could picture Littlefinger truly being outmaneuvered is if even we don't know it's happening.
Yeah.
So then clearly he can't know it's happening.
He gave her the tools to do this to him.
Yeah, because if there were any tells between their conversations that we were supposed to have noted, then he should have noted it, basically, because he was so wise in his ways. So I think that was the only way it could really have played out for him, with the way what we have as our tools for just the books. Or for the show, that he had to be completely in the dark, just as we did, in order for it to be a true blindsight.
Right. And she, when Sansa was calling him out on his crimes, it was all things that affected the Vale. So, you know, the murder of Jon Arryn, the murder of Lady Lyza, all for him to gain control and to basically start the war. That was incredible. It wasn't he did this to me. It was look at what he has done to the House of the Vale. You know, the Eyrie has suffered at the hands of this man. I thought that was pretty good to play that.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely learned from the master. Mm-hmm. She taught me everything he knew. My favorite part of that scene is when Arya first walks in, they close the door behind her, and she like looks at Sansa. It's like, sure you want to do this?
Yeah.
Kinda almost like in Winter Soldier when they're on the elevator. And he's like, before we start, does anybody want to get off?
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of that. And I love that Bran used Baelish's words against him, and it was almost like the final nail that Baelish knew he was fucked. That
he's out of his depth.
He quoted exactly what he whispered in Ned Stark's ear, and he's like, all right, this kid does have the gift. And then Arya just, like, it was nothing. He's like, oh, poor Baelish.
Yeah, I was devastated.
Yeah. Poured some of my 40 out for him. He definitely was one of my homies.
And then Arya just murdering him right then and there, like judge, jury, executioner, dread style, in front of everybody with the cat's paw dagger. That was pretty cool. I mean, that's really the only reason why we've been showcasing it so much this whole season, was just so it can come around full circle to murder the man that put it in the killer's hands to begin with. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, then we got, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, do we think that all of Sansa's moves to point out the Vale's injuries as a result of Peter Baelish are enough to get them to just pledge to Sansa directly? Or are we going to have to see any more Robin Arryn in order to get him on their team again?
I think
God, Robin Arryn. No,
I think that because she found a way of uniting the houses. She said, you know, attacked our families. You know, identifying Jon Arryn, identifying Lady Lyza, who is a Tully, you know, and very much a Stark in the grand scheme of things. I think that it was by murdering Littlefinger, it was sort of a unification that doesn't need any more approval. It was saying, "Hey, look, we're in this together."
I think. Yeah, he even asked like the Vale to defend him. He's like, As Lord of the Vale, I demand you to escort me out of this building. And they all just like, yeah, you're fucked, dude.
Yeah. I ain't touching you with a 39.5-foot pole.
That frustrated me, though, that was immediately following his line of, well, at least give me a chance to defend myself. And then he immediately tries to flee without giving any long spiel or...
And he cries, words. You know, he kind of breaks down. He gets on his knees and begs for his life. That's not my Peter Baelish.
and for the first time, he's completely honest.
Yeah,
he talks about this how he always loved colors. His mother. Her mother always loved her, and you know that's true. And old Sansa would have showed mercy, but Baelish Sansa did not.
Mm-mm.
And that was great of Sansa mentioning their mothers and how, you know, this is actually the new generation's wisened up. Finally, and as you said, a slow learner, but definitely lesson learned.
Mm-hmm. Throat slit.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Their blood out right in the hall. And I was waiting for her to say, hey, pick that shit up.
Yeah.
Boy, clean that mess up. And then we kind of went back to Danny and to John. They had this cute little moment where everyone was pissed at John for being too Ned Stark-like. And she confided in John that she can't have kids. And John said, well, who told you that? And she's like, the witch who murdered my husband. And I love that John Snow's response was, do you ever think that maybe she wasn't a trained medical doctor? Maybe she was full of shit?
Yeah.
Was this all that was happening as they're kind of cuddling under the bleachers of the high school?
Yeah. Is he going to make out? You going to make out under the bleachers? And then I guess we'll lead right into them on the boat. kind of going at it, like Targaryens do. And so this scene was kind of weird for me for two reasons, because it was at the same time that Sam and Bran were having their discussion. We got to see the actual wedding between Rhaegar and Lyanna Stark, which legitimizes him as the rightful heir to the Game of the Iron Throne. But the sex scene was kind of weird because it was narrated by Bran, who was just kind of really, really hammering home that these are related, and then we're cutting to Tyrion, like, watching the door as they're doing it. And
I was seeing it the second time, or second or third watch was, not that I watched it that many times, of course, I was thinking maybe it was from the perspective of Catelyn Stark and how concerned she was to see Rob fall head over heels and, you know, disarming to be distracted by love when you're in the middle of a mission, if not the greatest war ever. And so to have both of the most important players maybe be distracted because of their interest in each other could be very troublesome for the plan of how to survive.
Yeah, I definitely took it as Tyrion being like, oh, this is going to end bad. Mm-hmm. There's no scenario in which this ends good. The season comes to a close at the Wall. We get Tormund and Dondarrion, and they're watching, and all of a sudden they see all of these wights come to the Wall and stop, because you know what? They can't actually get past the Wall, so we don't have to worry about them. But oh, wait, we gave them a dragon last episode, and in what was a very cool scene, it looked pretty awesome when Viserion was taking down the Wall, I couldn't help but just continue to think, why? It just seemed too convenient that we gave them a dragon, but I guess that's neither here nor there. What did you guys think of the destruction of the fabled Wall?
That looked cool. I liked how Viserion had holes in his wings. Like he looked like a legit undead dragon, like something out of World of Warcraft. And I thought that looked cool.
Yeah, I thought the blue fire was a nice touch. I was just going to give him the credit that the Night King's powers of resurrection maybe gives him a higher burning flame, as well as maybe he is immune to his flame, obviously, because if he was able to be killed by flame, then him projecting flame would probably just embalm himself, I guess. So I think the Night King's powers are just what's supporting all of the extra high-intensity flames that seem to be more powerful than any of the other dragons so far.
Yeah, game Frostfire.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That's one thing that this show has really surprised me with is the fire breath, especially in this season, just looks really cool. I like how it has an impact. It's not just sort of a flame. It is more like a missile, and that I think that's really cool.
Yeah, we really got it a lot with the ice last step, so I thought that was a really cool effect, how it made sense. You know, they were blowing fire on ice. It's going to have like an almost explosion. And I thought that was really cool. They were like carving these craters into the ice and stuff like that. But yeah, the animators who are doing the dragons this season are definitely the MVPs. Like everything in the dragon, even the sounds, like the dragons are making cool sounds. The fire breath has a unique sound. You know, they kind of have these grunts that they make. And it would have been really easy for them just to have this cool dragon, but it was the little touches, like Justin said. You know, he had the holes in the wings, and he looked so badass, and we got that cool scene at the very end of, like, the Night King on top of the dragon, like, coming right at us, right at camera and stuff like that. And, it was definitely pretty great.
I suppose making a hole in the wall makes more sense than picking up a couple White Walkers at a time and then dropping them over the wall.
Ferry them over.
It's not nearly as funny. Though.
You get three trips. You can only carry five White Walkers at a time. How does he do it?
And as he drops them off, there's like 10 people there to kill him. They're like, okay, well, just keep bringing them. Three at a time. Are we led to believe that Tormund got away?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Making sure.
And Beric.
My hope is that Tormund and Brienne make those giant babies that'll rule the world. That's my hope.
Yeah. Do we get a happy ending?
I'm worried.
I was thinking about this the other day. Like, at the end, I don't really care what happens to Jon or Dany.
asshole.
I shouldn't say it like that. Like, if they were to die saving the world, I would be fine with that. If they were to survive and rule the Seven Kingdoms, I would be fine with that. I don't mean I don't care. I mean, it's not as important. It's characters like Tormund and the Hound and Jaime. It's these... Jaime's not really an ancillary character. He's kind of a major character. But these ancillary characters. And I really... Because this season's really been a boots-on-the-ground type season. You know, it hasn't been a Queen Cersei commands from afar. We've been in the shit. And we've come to really love some of these characters that we didn't think we would love when we first met them. And I would love for those characters to have a happy ending. Mm-hmm. All right. To where the major characters, they've had their moments. Their names are going to be etched in the history books that old Nans will tell little Brands for centuries to come. It's the Tormunds and the Briennes and the Hounds and the Jaimes. Those are the ones I would love to see have a happy ending, and obviously they all can't.
So what are the odds that this whole show is just another round of the spin of the wheel of a cyclical universe where the same events play out? No matter the players, just the same thing happens over and over.
Where they push back the White Walkers and build the wall?
In the Long Night, and the wall gets maybe restored or rebuilt, and then there's just another building of the Night King's army who comes back down. And
over the course of 800 years or whatever, it just
becomes... 8,000.
8,000 years, it becomes a fairy tale to tell kids before bedtime?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, I hate that idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to come down to who is the Night King? Is the Night King Bran, like some people are theorizing? If the Night King's Bran, then yes, it's probably going to be a cyclical thing that's just going to keep happening. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are also theorizing that they're going to go like the World of Warcraft route, to where there always has to be a Lich King, so there always has to be a Night King. Mm. And so that once when Jon defeats the Night King, he will have to become the new Night King.
Oh, and maybe he
holds the Caribbean.
Maybe he holds him back. Maybe that's why it takes so long, because he... Let's just pretend that we'll buy into this for a second. And Jon becomes the Night King, and he has a way of controlling this horde of undead for some time. But then eventually he loses himself, and then, you know, the anger and the hatred sinks in, and then he wants to take over again. Thousands of years.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, over thousands of years, I mean, I'm sure you would begin to lose your humanity because you're not around your family anymore.
I get bored out of my mind over the course of a weekend when I have nothing to do. I can't imagine what I would be like after like 8,000 years.
After 48 hours of a weekend, you're ready to lay siege to downtown
city. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so bored. I'm going to go crazy.
If I only had 100 years. How many years does it take to master a javelin throw? And then what else you got to try to master while you're up there?
Oh, that's
bringing
true.
People back from the dead.
That's a pretty good trick.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mean, Martin has always said that the ending of Game of Thrones will be bittersweet. And I can think of very few bittersweet endings than...
That means people would die.
That's
code for people die.
Yes. Which no one should be surprised of at this point.
No, but there are some characters that people are going to be devastated when they die. You know, you would be sad when Tormund dies, and when Cersei dies, and when Tyrion were to die, or Jon, or Daenerys, or dragons die. It's going to be emotional. And it amazes me that the wolves aren't even a thing anymore. Like, Ghost hasn't been around since Jon came back to life. It's kind of weird that he just hasn't popped back up again. But there are characters, like for me, it was Littlefinger. I was devastated when he died. He was my dark horse in this whole story. And now I don't even want to watch it anymore, Dave. I'm like, fuck this show.
Okay, Justin, what you can save one person. What's your best guess of who, one character who makes it to the end of the Game of Thrones?
Oh.
What's your safest bet?
My safest bet?
Yeah.
I think a safe bet would be like Sansa. I think Sansa will make it to the end of this.
Because she's never going to be fighting.
Yeah.
What about you, Will?
I kind of like to think the Hound, because he's a tough fucker and he's hard to kill.
I don't know how you live this long. I'm good at killing him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if something happened to Sansa. I think Arya has a better shot of making it out than Sansa.
I think Arya would jump in front of a train of White Walkers to protect Sansa.
And come out the other end. The only person who needs protecting is the person who gets in Arya's way.
Yeah.
That was an adorable little scene where the Hound and between the Hound and Brienne.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm certainly not going to be me.
And he even smiled.
Yeah.
That's definitely one reunion I'm hoping happens, is the fully trained and techniqued out Arya meeting the Hound, and who original mentor, I guess, or not necessarily original if you count her dancing master, but one of the most influential ones for sure.
Who's still on her list. Well, I guess isn't on our list because she thinks he's dead.
She took him off when she's talking to the Waif, actually.
Oh, did she?
She said, you know, who's on your list? And she lists all these people. And then she's like, surely there's more. And she says, well, there's the Hound. He was on my list, but he's not anymore.
I always read that as he's dead.
She may have thought he was dead. I also think she just removed him from the list.
Yeah. Totally off subject. There's a prank call. It's the Hound calling KFC. And it's the scene where him and Arya get needleback from the guy who stole it from her. And he basically walks into this inn and he's like, give me one of those chickens. And he's like, you got money for that? He's like, oh, you're a talker. He's like, talkers make me thirsty. And he like, grabs his drink and drinks his drink. He's like, now give me two chickens. And he starts with his mouth. If I hear one word come out of your cunt mouth, I'm going to kill all of you and eat all of your chickens. So they're calling this poor lady at KFC. And it was just magic. But sorry, didn't mean to sidetrack us.
Like that's amazing.
I normally do. I mean, I think we covered pretty much what happens. I mean, do any of you have any strong predictions of what we will see? I mean, Cersei made it through this season. I don't think anyone really gave her much of a chance of making it through this season. I thought for sure that this season would be all about bringing Cersei down, and next season was going to be the White Walkers, but Cersei lives. So that's good news, right, Justin?
Yeah, I'm excited.
What? Any predictions for season 8, other than the obvious, they'll fight the White Walkers? We'll get six episodes?
Six episodes? Oh, man.
Episode 1, I think Jon's definitely learning about his parentage from Sam and Bran right away.
That'll be a pretty big shock, I'm sure.
Especially with like the realization that I just had sex with my aunt on the way here.
Yeah, I don't know how Jon's going to take that. Targaryens are cool with it, but Jon's a Stark.
That's true.
At his core, he's a Stark. And I imagine that's something that Ned would have frowned on. Don't bang your aunt. It's that and he who passes the sentence should swing the sword. Those are the two like mantras that he passed on to his kids. But, yeah. And the other thing this season, I was really digging the costume design. Like, Cersei, end of last season, she really kind of just embraced her darkness. But, like, this episode, she's wearing this awesome black number. And it kind of had, like, a jeweled lion. It was so subtle that you couldn't see it in every shot.
Right. I was kind of hoping, I agree with you, costumes were amazing, but I wish that she sort of had lions on her shoulders. Like, I thought that would have been cool, like silver lions. I know they're all into gold because they're Lannisters, but with her particular outfit, either black lions just to add to the subtlety, or some badass, like a straight-up anime Final Fantasy type of thing with silver lions on her shoulders with like a chain sort of connecting the two with a cape behind her would have been pretty badass.
Damn. That yeah, the tailors in Westeros were definitely busy before the finale because everybody was dressed up. Jorah had a nice getup that was all looking fresh, and Jon was wearing a full direwolf outfit in
Aren't you hot? Landing.
Yeah, I know. It reminded me of like a meeting of the five families in like a mob movie or something like that. I thought that was kind of
Someone's getting whacked.
Yeah.
It's like out of Godfather 3 and the dragon comes down like the helicopter and starts blasting people and the guy goes back for his coat.
Yeah, that would have been cool if Daenerys just did that and just fucking mowed everybody down. It was like, I win!
It was too easy.
And I didn't have to burn down the city to do it.
Yeah. And even Daenerys' costumes, I really dig her like three-headed dragon brooch that she's been wearing a lot.
Yeah.
She's had some really cool outfits. She's wearing this like chain thing that took me a couple episodes to like kind of grasp what it was, but her outfits are really cool. Like whoever's dressing the ladies did like they did a good job this season. I'm sure they'll be rewarded come Emmy time. And I like that Cersei wasn't fazed by the dragons. Like, everyone else has kind of been like, oh, fuck, there's dragons. What are we going to do? When Dany came in, she saw it for, like, the cheap theatrics that it was. And she's like, yep, she's got dragons.
Jamie was definitely still flustered after how close he came to the dragon.
I expect they're like, pointed, that's the one! That's the one that almost ate me.
I think that was actually a moment I forgot I appreciated so much was Jamie and Sam both being, I don't know, just so honest in their ability to accept things that people say. And so Dany mentions how she saw the full 100,000 Army of the Dead count, and he goes, wow, that's just, you know, he's already blown away by how scary that number sounds. And then later when Sam walks in the door and meets Bran, who's a lot different than he was when he saw him at the wall, and he goes, you know, John's coming back with Daenerys Targaryen. So, oh, do you have a vision? Because he's already ready to believe. He's heard one statement that what that means to have visions. He's already ready to be like, you had visions, huh? No, I got a letter right here.
Yeah. That was another one, too.
But he was so ready to be like, magic's real.
Yep. It's like when he's on the Three-Eyed Raven. I was like thinking, oh, that's nice. Like in Community, you remember how the one lady's always like, oh, that's nice. That's totally what I was thinking. Oh, so funny. That was a good scene, too. They are two very different sort of characters, so they played off each other pretty well.
Yeah. It's interesting, Bran being like, I know everything, I see everything. I'm the only one that knows about Jon's heritage. And then here's Sam immediately dropping some information that changes Bran's whole realization of everything. Mm-hmm. Up until like, the whole rebellion, he didn't even realize it was all a lie because he didn't go to that moment or didn't know about that moment.
And then Sam totally took
the limit of his power.
And Sam took all the credit for it. He's like, I was reading about it. He's like, no, you weren't.
Yeah. What's an annulment?
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was a pretty fast season, obviously, because there's only 7 episodes. What grade would you give this, Justin? And if you, it might be too soon to put it in an order, where would you place it with the other seasons that we've seen so far?
So I think this season, so the episode, I give it A. I loved everything about it. I thought it was a fantastic episode. The season I would also give an A for. I know I've given a lot of shit because of the time travel and all that stuff, but at the same time, this thing's got to end, so we got to get the ball rolling. I was at the edge of my seat for almost the entire season. I think feel like there was a lot of fan service. I feel like I've been rewarded as a viewer. And everyone is talking about this show right now. It has literally taken over the world. When the first 3 seasons, the Red Wedding was like the best kept secret on the internet. No one knew it was coming. And now everyone is just spoiling everything. You can't go on Twitter or Facebook without there being some sort of Game of Thrones thing. This series has just sort of taken the world by storm, and it's got people reading. You know, everyone's going back and reading the books and being really excited about reading, and that's kind of cool for me. Not a lot of people read anymore. So as soon as somebody's read the books, my ears just immediately perk up, and I'm really excited about that. So I love what it's doing for just geek culture and getting everybody excited about something. It's cool when something has the power to bring everybody together like that, and it's even more exciting when it's a show where people just die every episode. So I'm 100% pumped and excited, and it's an A across the board for me. End of story.
I think I definitely want to give it an A because I think every season over season, I'm just that much more impressed by how all the stories develop. Even when things start to get into the realm of, can we start to predict some of the outcomes? Because we've been talking about it for so much, like you said, I still am taken aback by the choices they make sometimes. I'm surprised. I'm always enjoying the displays by the actors because they do such a good job in the roles that they were casted for. I mean, I've heard people talk about how some roles became so much bigger than they probably were initially intended just because of how well they were portrayed and received. And so, like, Bronn's probably a great example of that. And those are the characters that I've really enjoyed following so much. And every season over season, I can't wait to get some more episodes. And so this is going to be a tough, long wait, I'm sure. And then it's going to be probably even harder when it's all wrapped up and concluded. But I have really high hopes that this magnitude of enthusiasm about the show is going to keep growing into the final season. And then I think we're all going to be happy with the final outcome.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I would say the same. A's across the board. Like, I've been very critical about some of the actors in the past, but this season, even the ones that I've been critical on, you know, your Emilia Clarke's and your Sophie Turner's, your Sansa and your Daenerys, everybody really seemed to be just firing on all cylinders this season, and their portrayals are just great. You know, the reintroduction of the dragons, although I'm really sad, like Justin, that the direwolves are for some reason not a part. I have to imagine direwolves are cheaper to animate than fucking dragons.
Right.
That part makes me sad, but we got a lot more dragons. It was nice that even though HBO made less episodes, they kept the same budget. So they were able to have less episodes, but every episode, you could tell that more money was spent on. We got dragons in almost every single episode, and they were magnificent. I'm really optimistic for the future, and what Justin said is true, man. Game of Thrones is, other than Star Wars, I've never seen anything take over, like, the whole zeitgeist like Game of Thrones. Like, even people aren't, like, even my wife who doesn't watch it, like, she's, like, peripherally kind of, like, paying attention, like, to, like, what I'll, like, tell her because, like, everyone at her work is talking about it and stuff like that. So it's always great when there's, like, these national pop culture phenomenons, and even though Game of Thrones has kind of always been one of the last couple seasons, this season especially seemed to really capture people's imaginations, probably because of all the fan service, and we got so many great reunions this year, and I know I kind of shit on them that they all seemed rushed and like put together, but you know, in the end, it's they got to bring everyone together so they can come together to fight this threat. So we were going to get these reunions when Bronn, Pod, and Tyrion were back together. Like, it just warmed my heart. Like, just the three of them talking and all admitting that they missed each other. So, A plus. Mm-hmm. But that's all I got. You guys got anything else?
I know this next year is going to be full of people making guesses about the final season. And I think one of the things that I was having fun trying to do today was guessing what the final shot will be. And maybe to pay off weight, for the direwolves, maybe the last shot we get is maybe Ghost kind of overlooking the final result of the battle, or overlooking Winterfell or something. It's like a, I don't know, panning out shot. It would be kind of cool.
That would be cool. I was thinking dragons just kind of flying off in the back, like a shot of King's Landing, and then just dragons either perched up or flying off into the sunset.
Well, you had a real cool observation, Justin, a couple weeks ago about that you would thought that the dragons would all die, you know, kind of like they're too powerful to be kind of left around.
Sure.
And then you would mention like...
an egg?
Yeah, they're kind of ending with like someone in like a deep catacomb, like with like a torch walking by a shelf, and he doesn't notice it, but there's like two dragon eggs like there or something like that. And it would be cool if that was kind of like the last shot, like, you know, it's some unnamed squire or something like that going down to the dungeons or something like that. He just happens to walk by a shelf and then like covered in dust behind, you know, a bottle of wildfire or something is like three dragon eggs.
Yeah. Behind the lady Viper's corpse from dying.
She's still there.
Yeah. There's an egg in her cell and they go check on her.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, she's and look at how close Daenerys is to her, and she has no idea. She's just locked in the dungeon in that castle somewhere.
If you want to hide an egg somewhere, I guess the Iron Throne, if it was melted down and reveals an egg, that would be quite the location to hide one as well. Because that was supposed to be forged by Beleriand and Aegon the Conqueror.
Yeah, Beleriand
melted a bunch of swords. Yeah.
It's an uncomfortable piece of furniture.
You get cut all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to sit on it.
But yeah, that's it for me, man.
Nice. What about you, Will? Anything else for this week?
I just want to say thanks again, guys, for having me on the show so many times.
Always welcome.
We'll do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I got to get up early tomorrow. No. Well, cool. Well, thanks for joining us again, Will. I'm sure I can promise listeners that I'm sure you will be back at some point. And it was a ton of fun having you. If I let Randy out of my basement, I guess he'll come back next week. But I don't know. He's making a lot of noise down there. I might just throw Baby Root down at him and call him Sloth for the rest of his life. But anyways, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Make sure to go to geeklegacy.com for all of your geek news and reviews. And make sure to check out one of our other podcasts, the Pixelated Podcast, where Justin and Stephen K. James talk about video games. And make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Geek Legacy, and you stay classy, San Diego.